correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com.
Welcome to Me and Steve Talk RPGs, a podcast where me and my friend Steve try and help you get the most out of your role-playing game experience.
Hey folks, what's up? Welcome back to Me and Steve Talk RPGs. I'm here tonight with Steve.
Hi Steve.
And we've got actually two special guests this week. Well, actually, because of things... And welcome back, by the way, after our week off for Gamer Nation Con.
That
actually leads into both the topic for the show, which we're going to tell you all about the fun that was had. And to assist us with that, as I mentioned before, we have two guests. We have one of our honorary Steves, JT Domino.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Steve.
Hello, JT. Welcome back. And also appearing for the first time on Me and Steve, another member of the Studio 404 team. We're being joined tonight by Alex Newbold.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Steve. And hello, JT.
Hey, Alex.
So anyway, unfortunately, Steve was not able to be at GNC this year.
Yes, quite unfortunately.
And you were missed. I was asked about you numerous times. But that being said, you know, a recap is more fun if there are more people who were there to recap things.
Well, and it makes me like a listener because I get to have you recap it to me.
And you get to ask questions.
Right? I get to be like, wait, how many people were in this game? 42? Wow, that's crazy.
I think it would be a really cool episode if we just had other Steve, you know, recap the con he wasn't there for.
Right. Just so there were games played and it was great. Everybody had a fantastic time.
I mean, you could have gone to a GNC at the mall and just said you were there, but, you know.
Right. Man, I was at this con, and there was just nothing going on.
I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of listeners. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
No, just go for it.
No, just saying that I'm sure there are plenty of listeners to the show that were at GN Con, but for those that weren't, they wouldn't know the difference anyway, so.
Well, hopefully we can let them in on a little bit of what they were missing.
Yes.
Because... I mean, Steve was there last year, so he knows the vibe. It really is unlike anything else. You know, it's 4 days of wall-to-wall games.
Yes.
And that's the only way I can explain it. I mean, so for RPGs, I played 2 sessions Thursday, 3 sessions Friday, 3 sessions Saturday, and 1 Sunday. I didn't do much board gaming or cards or whatever, but that's a lot.
Oh, that's the point of going to a con. You get a lot of gaming in. But yeah, that really is a lot. My RPG experience was similar, a little less. I think I hit 2 RPGs a day, only one on Sunday due to limited hours. But I did manage to get a pile of board games in because when you've got a 4-hour block to kill, you can get 4 1-hour board games in or 2 2-hour board games, which is a lot of great flexibility. So you can manage RPGs and then take a breather by playing a 1-hour board game or a pickup card game, then go get lunch, then go to your next game. It's a really nice flexibility that the con offers.
Mm-hmm. And there was, everything, all kinds of stuff being run. I won't say everything because, we're all RPG nuts. We know how many games are out there, but.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I played, I played 9 sessions. Now, 4 of those were games I ran. I ran the same adventure for 2 different systems twice each, or similar adventure. But that being said, of everything that I played 2 sessions of Star Wars, and I think the only other game I'd ever played before, and that was actually still as GM, was I ran Havoc Brigade there last year and had run it a time or two otherwise. But everything else I did was something that I had never actually done before, which I thought was cool. I got to play One Ring 2E. I got to play Earth Dawn with our friend Brett, your partner in Studio 4, Alex.
Yeah.
404. Jeez, I can't speak.
He wrote up a really great adventure specifically for this con based on the Eclipse. And mm-hmm. it was a when he explained to me the concept of it, I was like, that's wild and that's perfect. You need to run this game.
You know, I don't know how much variety the rest of you got in, if you want to expand on that or anything like that.
I go first, Alex?
Yeah, you go first. That sounds like a plan.
Okay. I see what you did there. Okay. yeah. So actually, I was an MVG this year, Most Valuable Gamer, and part of the benefits of that is that you get to have games run by GM Chris, who's one of the con organizers, as well as the guest of honor for the con, which this year was Rev Tanner. And for the first time, I think they did a third one, as far as I know, which was GM Dave did Everyone is Gollum, since our theme was Lord of the Rings Tolkien.
Mm-hmm.
And that
I
was
I think
a lot
I
of
was
fun.
On the other side of the room during that one.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun.
All right, let's put it this way. I remember a session of that happening while I was playing Earth Dawn with Brett.
Yeah, no, but actually, this was the first Gamer Nation Con where I didn't specifically sign up to run anything, because there were three games now that I was committed to automatically. I didn't want to necessarily fill out my schedule with stuff I was running so that I would have a chance to like play in other people's games and stuff and get the chance to do some things, you know, that I wanted to try out.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to run a few pickup stuff, and that was good too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which is one of the nice things about Gamer Nation Con is that whenever you don't have an event that you've signed up for or you've got time to kill, you can basically always find someone who's willing to play like a quick one-shot or board game or something. So you'll never not be able to game if you want to.
Mm-hmm. That is actually how I landed my beta game.
Ooh, nice.
All right, I'm gonna piggyback on what JT said there. I too did not run any games at Gamer Nation Con this year. I didn't have any time to set up ahead of time, and I know I could always pull something out, but I did manage to just say, you know what, I'm gonna go to the con, I'm gonna relax, I'm gonna have fun, and that's exactly what I did. And it was I'm glad. I've already got an idea for next year's con though, so look out, folks. But like JT said, there's always pickup games. I was only able to sign up for four games ahead of time before the con because things filled up really fast. But I wasn't worried because I knew that there would be tables available and there'd be pickup games. And I could walk to the board game library, grab a board game, put it on the table and say, hey, I'm going to play this. Who wants to play? Or if I didn't feel like organizing something, I'd just walk around the main gaming room and look around for that flag that people put on their table that says seeking gamers. And I knew I'd be able to get a pickup game. That's how I ended up in your Havoc game. I literally walked by and I was like, what's going on? And you were like, I've got a table. I've got a game. I'm like, I'm in. And I had an absolute blast. It was a great time. And I'm really glad I'm glad I had open time during the con to explore and find new stuff. Because I had some really great experiences playing with people I did not know and playing in systems I did not know. Just straight up fun.
That really is. And I mean, that's the whole thing there is like, yeah, like it, actually the game, the mine that you got in on, I had someone sign up for it. They didn't show. And so we gave them, you know, a little bit of time, but also it was one of those where like no one knew them.
Right.
Because the other thing, and I'm sure you all see this, there's a seat empty at the table, and we're like, who's the... and someone's like, hang on, I'll message them. You know, and they just hop on the Discord real quick and like, hey, or, you know. In this case, it was someone that no one knew who they were, and they never did show up looking for their seat. The irony of that was, I think I ran out to the lobby for something real quick and had someone else ask me if I had a seat for that game.
Good timing.
Oh, sorry. Random person walked by and took the seat.
I'm like, sorry, I did, but it filled up 30 seconds ago. But yeah, I mean, like it, oh gosh, like, and there was people running, you know, obviously there's plenty of Genesis and Star Wars, and the theme this year was Lord of the Rings / fantasy, but everyone kind of, I think, went really deep on the Lord of the Rings stuff. I know I got to play in two sessions of a three-part Star Wars Lord of the Rings called Lord of the Holocrons. That was absolutely amazing. That was run by Daryl and some of the other crew from How We Roll, which is a gaming club there in the Dallas area. But that was and it was amazing too. Like for us, how even the dice rolls keyed into like what was supposed to happen at that point in the story. It was wild.
Yeah, the narrative dice system is great for that.
But
it's a complete
unless it's not
card.
The system you ran it in, but yeah.
Well, no. We were playing in that case. It was Fantasy Flight Star Wars, and Star Wars characters, but doing like the Lord of the Rings story adapted to Star Wars.
That's awesome.
Like I got to play S4M GMG, the erstwhile companion of Mr. Frode, who also happened to be a R2 unit.
And are you all droids or?
Oh no. I forget what Mr. Frode was. The Gandalf character was a I forget what the race is called, but they're kind of like Naga.
Oh right.
The Gimli character was an Ugnaught. You know, the Aragorn character, I believe, was a human. I don't remember. The elf, I think, was a Togruta. The Legolas character was a Togruta. You know, so it was themed. And then, you know, like, yeah, it was all kinds of fun. You know, you had Sith Inquisitors instead of the Nazgul.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
You know, like I said, Naboo kind of stood in for the Shire, and then
that's a really good substitution. Naboo is, you know, the home everyone left and never went back to again. I like that.
Alderaan was dang it, I'm blanking on the name of the elven city at the moment, but you know, where Frodo goes to get healed after he gets stabbed in the shoulder. Rivendell.
Yeah. Nope, that works too. I can see that. That's
you know, Moria was Kessel. it worked so well. It was amazing. Honestly, and then like I said, different things would happen, inappropriate scenes, like I think, you know, like you'd have a despair roll or something that where something bad happens to the character in the Lord of the Rings, and in the corresponding kind of scene in our game, it was wild.
It sounds like a blast.
Oh yeah. So yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't even know where to start with all this because, like I said, my weekend, I guess, con started off. I had a session literally an hour after the doors opened, where I was running my Tolkien-inspired Men in Black. And I will tell y'all, the scary thing to me is how small of like two logic steps it takes to put Tolkien in the Men in Black universe. Because J.R.R. Tolkien actually worked for British intelligence during World War II as a codebreaker. So it's a tiny step from there to what we would now call like signals intelligence. And from there, all we have to do is say, well, the Lord of the Rings and his fiction was really just dramatic retellings of intercepted alien signals. And we're there.
That's epic.
Hilarious.
So I'm running this game where the kind of the premise is that there's an alien ship headed for the Hobbiton set in New Zealand, and the Men in Black aren't sure exactly who they are or why they're coming, but they know that actually Hobbiton is partially populated by Balshans were the name of the species. Remember in the original Men in Black, the little guys inside the suit where you turned the ear and it opened up?
Yep. Right. Tony Haloub's character.
Flying the meat suits.
Oh, no, not the other guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's who I decided to use as the ones that are hiding as hobbits because it's too perfect. Well, so as it turns out, I had a player at the table who had actually visited the site in New Zealand. And so it was Alyssa. And she starts telling us, oh, yeah, there's this and there's this. And there's even a cat that runs around and his name's Pickles. And of course, if you've seen the original Men in Black, well, now I have to use Pickles.
Yep. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
You know, and so madness ensued. Brett was actually in that game. And of course, inspired by another one of our listeners, there was a massive misdirect involved where the aliens that crash landed weren't actually coming to terrorize Hobbiton. Well, they were, but in cosplay, not to actually terrorize it. But then they had other things with them that got loose, and then they had to be stopped, and they ended up blowing up a Tim Tam factory to stop it.
Oh, jeez.
As you do.
Right, because I mean, it's Men in Black.
Yeah, there's got to be something that blows up.
So, yeah, that was how my con started. How about, you know, any you guys start anything off with a bang?
Oh.
My first game was GM Brev's Alien game, which was a lot of fun. And I've played the Alien RPG a few times before, but this was a totally original adventure that he did. So that was really cool. I'll let everyone know, you know, I don't want to give away spoilers in case you ever play in GM Brev's Alien game, but everyone died. It didn't necessarily have to be like that, I guess. Although, would it really be Alien if everyone didn't die?
Well, but, I was going to say, it's, you know, Alien.
You know.
Yeah. So. It's,
yeah.
If you don't die, you're just going to die in the opening credits of the next film.
Yeah. But I have to say that it was all Darren's fault. we were playing with Darren the West, one of our players. And yeah, he's totally responsible for everything. Darren, if you're listening, all your fault.
My con started with a very explosive game. In fact, it had exploding dice. Is the current version of the Marvel Universe role-playing game.
Ah, did you play with Ben?
I played with Ben. Ben ran a great game. The Witch King of, I forget the name of the universe, but I must say it was the Witch King of 3917 or 3971. And we were Marvel heroes. I'm not sure
if it was the same one that I did, because I played in one of his sessions that was Witch King of Earth 616.
That's what it was. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm overthinking the numbers. I know that.
Yeah. I mean, there were a few different worlds mentioned during the session. So yeah. I can understand the confusion.
First off, Ben had posted photos of the minis he made for this game like a week or two before, and he posted the heroes. He had a Human Torch, Storm, Captain America, a couple other really good ones, all hand painted, all absolutely gorgeous, and you got some serious talent there.
I played Cyclops.
Cyclops was fun. I played Captain America.
Nice,
because I'm a great big nerd. And Captain, the way the system worked great, and right off the bat, me and Keith got nervous that he was playing Cyclops and I was playing Captain America, and at a quick glance at our character sheets, it looks like we had competitive power sets because we were both tactically minded characters with a lot of tactical abilities. But it turned out that Captain America was a really defensive tactical character, where Cyclops was an offensive tactical player, and our abilities complemented each other so well. And we just worked it out so the blaster type characters, Storm, the Human Torch, and Spider-Man, they got to shine because we would supplement their abilities with our tactical capabilities. Now, I'm just talking system in now, but it had a Lord of the Rings theme to it. I don't want to give away too much, but it started out as Marvel, and it worked its way into Lord of the Rings at the end. And Ben played it up really great with starting out every encounter like he was reading from a comic book. You know, the old way Stan Lee and crew used to introduce the Marvel true believers to the beginning of the story. And at the end of the encounter, he'd tie it back in to the end of the issue and tune in next month and all that sort of stuff. And he really played it up, the serial aspect. And it was fun. It was a great introduction to the con. And I had a great group of players at the table with me who all just, in a moment, got the feel of a Marvel Comics game. And it was really... It was great.
That's cool. I know Steve and I both got to read some of the early playtest releases of that, and let's say didn't have the highest opinion of what we saw, although I have had some conversations with Ben and others, and from what I understand, the current version of the game is very, very improved and really quite good.
Awesome. I'm not surprised that Ben was able to grow with input and feedback and whatnot. I will admit I was nervous when I first started reading the Marvel rules because they didn't make sense to me in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. I hadn't had a chance to open the rule book, and I looked at my character sheet and it had a bunch of numbers and other stuff, and I didn't really get it. But once we started rolling, and everything, it just flowed. I picked up the system really easily. I'm going to hark back to the exploding dice that I mentioned. A single one of the D6s has Marvel on it in place of a 6, well, in place of the 1. And when you roll that, you roll again and add the result, and it just keeps getting higher and higher, for those of you who don't understand what exploding dice are. But the system was great. It flowed really easily. Everything made sense. Ben had worked out cheat sheets, like cliff notes for us, so that we could pass around the table to see what was available. He did a great job setting up a new game for newer players. Everyone who sat at the table understood it, and that's one thing that I've really only encountered at Gamer Nation. I've been to other cons where I sit down and it's like, yep, welcome to your game, here's your character sheet, yep, sorry, no life preserver. And you flounder and try to catch up with the experienced players who roll their eyes at you because gamers are judgy. But no. Ben, so many of the Gamer Nation GMs go out of their way and write up four or five sheets of quick notes for you to learn the game without asking questions and without feeling ignorant. And as usual, it excelled at the game, and it made everyone feel welcome and everyone feel like a part of the system, even though they'd never played it before.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, like the welcoming aspect too with that convention, you know, last year being, well, first year for both Steve and I, it was amazing how everyone was just so friendly and hey, you want to join in on this, you want to this, you want to that, you know, welcome to the con. I know actually in my Men in Black game, I had a player that had to leave due to things happening in real life, and stick my head out into the lobby and ask Hudson real quick. I'm like, you got anybody? I had someone have to leave. I kind of need a player. And there was this person standing there who had literally, like, basically walked in off the street for their first Gamer Nation con, like 5 minutes before that. He looks at you, you want to play a game?
That's awesome.
And ended up seeing them the rest of the weekend. They said they had an absolute blast the whole time.
Great.
That's awesome. That's how we get new people.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. You got to welcome new folks. If you don't, you get stagnant and elitist and bad reputations. Gamer Nation is the most welcoming con I've ever been to.
Oh, gosh.
Same.
Like, I say it like this. It feels to me less like a convention in your typical sense and more like if you had a college gaming club and it was homecoming weekend and you had a gaming festival within that.
That's a really good description.
You know, because like last year I remember like, you know, okay, I had talked, you know, Steve and I had talked to various people from other podcasts and so forth for our podcast. But other than I think we'd helped Brett play test the one Dragon City adventure. But other than that, we really hadn't done much with anybody. But everyone was just like, oh, it's you guys. Hey, welcome. You know, but also watching the other people greet each other. Like it was very much like, you know, old friends getting back together. All right, let's get down to some serious make-believe here.
Yeah, I can back that one up. I'm going to piggyback on the old friends getting together. This was my second Gamer Nation Con. My first one was 2019. And we all know what happened to Gamer Nation Con 2020, because we all know what happened to 2020, period. But I wasn't able to make 21 or 22 or 23. So I rolled in this year, you know, 5 years away from this crowd. And people I met once in 2019 were like, I am so happy to see you again. This is great. I've got a space at my game. You want to play? Hey, I'm running a game in a few hours. I'd really like it if you were at my table. I'm so glad to see you again. What have you been up to? What games are you running? How are your kids? I mean, it was like a family reunion, except no creepy uncle.
That's hilarious.
I try.
Yeah, it is, though. Like, it really is. It's just like, because, yeah, I experienced, and then like, okay, so second time at the convention, I seriously think, so first game I played last year, which was the first game I obviously played at the convention, Brett signed up to play in it. So there was one person at the table I had played with before. There were three people at the convention, technically, I had played with, well, no, four, I'm sorry. Because I had played a game online with GM Chris when he demoed Genesis for us, and we recorded it for an actual play.
Nice.
I'd played with Brett. Obviously, I've played with Steve. And then old gaming friend of mine, Jesse, came down last year for the con. He now lives in Denver, I believe, or Denver area. So there were a total of four people at the convention who I'd ever played with. Throughout all of last year, there was always someone at the table I was playing that I had played with before, even if it was just that weekend. And it was like just kind of wild that, oh, wait, you were in this game that I just played. And so like that familiarity grows so fast.
Yep.
And it's not that like there's only enough people there to play a handful of games. I mean, geez, the whole place was basically full this year.
Yep.
And there was a bunch of people I got to play with this year that I didn't get to play with last year, but whose faces I recognized. You know, it's just, oh my gosh. Yeah. So that, yeah. What else did... Because I don't think, Jake, you and I didn't get to play anything together this year, did we?
Yeah, that's one of my biggest regrets, is that we didn't get to play together this year.
Yeah, I know last year we played Monster of the Week. Well, you ran it and I played, but we were both at the table.
Yeah, that was Sunday morning. And actually, I talked to one of the players from that game last year. Was like, man, you know, we still talk about that game sometimes. That was great. You know, I said, well, you know, if you really liked it that much, do you want me to run it again? And so I ended up just doing like a pickup game of Monster of the Week again on Sunday.
Oh, cool.
You know, just sort of spur of the moment. But and that was a lot of fun. But yes, and next year, Monster of the Week is going to be right on theme. So I can do it again and actually potentially get people badges and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, that's
so
fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I love Monster of the Week.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The theme next year is well, I'm sorry, it's X-Files, but technically it's paranormal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which opens up to so much.
Look, okay, y'all don't realize, I went through my hard drive PDF library last night very, very quickly. And without counting anything for Genesis, Savage Worlds, any of my World of Darkness stuff, or any of my Mountain of Palladium stuff, I have 16 different games that qualify as paranormal without any twist. Which is a good problem to have, right? But like,
it is.
For sure.
I mean, you may have a type, though.
That and post-apocalyptic. I mean,
yeah, no
now you just
got to
combine the two.
Well, that's just Anarchy in Dragon City right there.
That or Rifts. Well, Rifts isn't really any type. Rifts is kitchen sink.
Yeah, yeah.
Rifts qualifies as anything.
Yes.
And therefore qualifies as nothing.
Yep.
But, yeah, so like... You know, like you mentioned, Alex, you played Havoc Brigade, and
yes,
I will say
yes.
Your portrayal of the hobbits was amazing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Please try the deal.
I was a little nervous going into that to see how those, because I built those characters. There are no rules for character creation that come with the game. So I'm like, well, okay, this is thematic and looks like it's a fun way to prompt them towards things. Here's some stuff.
Yeah.
But I still think the Wedgie and Tickles moment was
the Wedgie and Tickles was a chef's kiss stroke of genius on my part. Just watching the faces on everyone at the table just light up as they were trying not to cry from laughter. I'm going to back it up a bit and explain it to the folks who weren't there to witness the incident in question.
I was about to say, out of context, but so, it would be kind of hilarious
first
to leave
off,
it. At
that. We should explain Havoc Brigade slightly for anyone who's not played it. It's written by Grant Howitt, known for, amongst other things, Honey Heist. It is expressly designed as a con one-shot in which, in the original game, you play a band of orcs. And Steve's actually involved in a game of this we've been running with our weekly online group that has stretched into more than a one shot, but because we only get to play for like hour and a half, 2 hours at a clip, it doesn't overload you like it will playing at the table for 4 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the whole premise of this game is to do the crazy, dumb crap that you don't normally do because you don't want to derail your game. And to be fair, there are rules, but at some point in the session, it really becomes a game of, I want to roll to do something crazy, and I'm just starting as the GM to go, I'm not even assigning difficulty. I just want to see how many successes you get, and we'll go from there. Because everyone gets so into it, and even if the roll doesn't go well, it's fun to narrate the unplanned chaos as opposed to the planned chaos.
Yes.
Is that a fair description of the game, do you think, Alex, from an outside perspective?
Yes, because I had rolls that succeeded and I had rolls that failed, and the failed were just as fun as the succeeded. Now the explanation of the wedgie. Now that I was playing three hobbits, not three hobbits in a trench coat. That would be entirely different. I was playing three hobbits. And
you did have a cloak, though.
I did have a cloak, but it was a one-shot. I wanted to save it for dramatic intent, which I think
you
I did
well.
And I read over the character sheet, and it was pretty much a description of, you have three hobbits. They have a couple hit points each. And in the original game, you were supposed to have a bunch of goblins. And every now and then a goblin would get killed, and a goblin would get replaced by another goblin. So I decided that these three hobbits were really indistinguishable from each other, from anyone not a hobbit. So I had Hobbit A, Hobbit B, and Hobbit C, or maybe it was Hobbit C, Hobbit B, and Hobbit A. I'm really not sure. They always stood in a different order, and they answered to each other's names. Not that this came, not that their names came up very often, because no one bothered to call them by their names very quickly, because they realized it was just a horde of middle school boys running around in the darkness. I have two middle school age boys, so this was not hard for me to visualize. Pretty much, when danger would rear its ugly head, the hobbits would panic and run into the background and squirm and climb all over each other to get away from danger. Well, then we ran into some trolls, and the trolls were coming through the trees, so it was decided they were tree trolls instead of rock trolls or cave trolls or whatever. So we get into combat with the trolls, and in the second round of combat, I can't think of what to do immediately because I already did something fun with a jar of glue in the first session of combat. So we've got a troll stuck to the tree with a jar of glue in his hand. And so the hobbits literally swarm all over the troll, and they're climbing on him, and the first hobbit gives it a wedgie. The second hobbit climbs on top of it and is bonking its fists on the troll's head. And the third hobbit, well, he drew the short straw from the hobbits, and he ends up in front of the troll that is getting a serious wedgie, and he looks up, and I role-played this with my face as best I could, and I covered my hands with my face, and I screamed and cried out as this hobbit is looking face to crotch with this troll, and the hobbit yells, "No, no, I can't. I just can't do it. I'm sorry, folks." And everybody at the table started dying laughing. And the guy sitting next to the initiative order next to me said, "It's not fair that I have to come after him in initiative because I literally cannot follow that."
That's how that was a good moment.
I was quite proud of giving a troll a wedgie. I think one of the hobbits even referred to him as gym teacher Somerset as he gave him a wedgie.
Yeah, oh, that game is an absolute joy to run. Although I will say, after the session you were in, I was chastised by one of the players, and I quote, "Gee, thanks a lot, Steve. Now my abs hurt."
I'm ab day. I love it.
Like, you know, all in a good spirit, obviously. But
yeah.
That reminds me how GM Dave was like bragging that he like supposedly like someone peed their pants just from laughing so hard at his Everyone is Gollum game or something like that, you know, so.
Clearly, I've got a goal for the next Gamer Nation.
Yeah, there you go. That should be a badge in and of itself. Yeah.
I had to clean the floor.
Well, the second session I ran of it went equally as off the rails, but differently.
Good.
But so just because we're talking about Havoc Brigade and whatnot. So I start off with them. I'm like, you know what? I'll just give everyone a chance to introduce what they've got as a character. It took them half an hour because of everyone hit me. Like the person playing the hobbits was, they constantly like, I forget how he said it, but you know, like they did the same like switching thing.
Oh, perfect.
You know, and all that. And just, you know, general mayhem, you know, the dwarves were playing up the sibling rivalry and the one not being able to hear and so on. Then we got to the person who had the Legolas analog, who of course I named Armilus because, I mean, who doesn't love a good pun?
Oh, no, that's a great one. I like that.
He goes total, like, surfer bro with him.
Oh.
To the point where he declared that his character had an allergy to shirts and therefore could not wear a shirt and instead wore his chainmail shirt tied around his waist.
That's fantastic. I love it.
Right. So then we get the last person to do this was actually Fat Crab. I'm sure some of you know him from the Discord and so forth.
Yep.
He has the, again, you know, the characters were kind of like pointing at various Lord of the Rings characters. So he had the kind of Aragorn analog. He went like total goth emo with this. It was, oh my God, hysterical.
That's awesome.
You know, because, you know, Aragorn has the whole like avoiding his destiny, blah, blah, blah bit. It was just, oh. Played it up through the whole session. It was beautiful.
Fantastic.
You know, right along with Kate's, you know, wizard and everything else, the whole thing.
Distracted Radagast.
Yeah.
The conspiracy theorist.
Yes. Oh God. Yeah. And yeah. So I mean, and like the thing about that game is it just like, so you had the, like the tickle wedgie thing to lead off your session. I know the first time I ran it, their opening gambit was to make owlbear meat suits to sneak into the city with. And so the second session at GNC this year, they essentially lead off with the elf surfing up a waterfall.
Yep. Yep. I believe it.
Like,
it's madness.
Oh, but it's like, and you get those and madness. You get the serious games and it's, oh, it's great.
Okay. I think it would be really interesting since we haven't heard from the other Steve in a little while, if he had any questions about GN Con.
Yeah, I was going to just sort of ask, not necessarily about Gamer Nation Con, but more so about like your three specific favorite games that you played. You know, I know all of three of you have stories from all kinds of different games, but what's the one that sticks out the most from this con this time?
That's tough. Who wants to go first?
Well, I was just talking a bit, so one of you two.
Okay. Rock, paper, scissors, Alex. Not
good old rock. Rock always wins. I'm gonna go first because I had a game that it was a pickup game, and it was Saturday night for formerly known as Gamer Nation Con After Dark, and Tyler came to me, and Tyler's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" Because we had just finished an All Hobbit game, and the All Hobbit game was a lot of fun, and Tyler had some really good role-playing in that. So I was like, I don't know, I don't have anything going on. I was going to look for a pickup game. He's like, well, I'm going to run a game in a world I just created and I haven't had a chance to run yet. You want in? And I was like, that's a bold move for Gamer Nation Con. I'm in. I am so in. And he told me the concept. He's like, it's Space Truckers. It was a Genesis game set in corporate space where you work for a corporation and you're in deep space and you're doing faster than light jumps and stuff. And it's your day-to-day job. One of the stats on your character sheet is how much debt you're into the company. I was in 1,500,000 credits of debt to the company. And it was great. The crew of the ship we were on, he didn't have a name for our ship. We had to come up with a name for our ship. He didn't have a name for our company. We had to come up with a name for the company, which was fun because we had collaborative role-playing going on for that. And, you know, making fun of corporate names. And then we'd get serious for a corporate name. And then we'd make fun of another corporate name. But we had two flight officers, two engineering officers, and two guys who worked in the cargo hold. I was one of the guys in the cargo hold. The other guy in the cargo hold was actually a human-shaped robot played by Ben. And the other four characters at the table were really gung-ho and really excited, and they really wanted to do this. And Ben and I had these characters whose entire job was to make sure the cargo was okay. So we played it to the hilt. Because there's a great line in the first Alien film. They come out of hypersleep and they're getting ready to go touch down on LV-426 to check out the distress signal. And the two engineering guys just say, I think we should discuss the bonus situation. And that's the angle that Ben and I went with our characters, his robot and my cargo hold officer. And we watched them role play and go to town. And we're like, yep, don't care. Playing with cargo. And we had a lot of fun. And Tyler had built in a great twist to a sci-fi universe, which I don't want to reveal because he's talking about publishing this adventure and writing more in the universe. And I don't want to give away the big reveal, but it's the reveal surprised me. As a lifelong science fiction nerd, I did not see this coming and I really liked it. It was a lot of fun and it had some fresh originality to it. And Tyler put a lot of effort into his game and he worked in skill challenges and he worked in individual stuff that we didn't know about until we were in the middle of it, and it was a lot of fun for me. And it was great to see what I felt were newer players really, really getting into their roles, and I had a blast playing at that table.
That sounds cool. Amazing.
It was great.
Yeah, sounds that way. Yeah. I did hear, actually, in the hotel lobby, some people talking about that, so.
Awesome.
Yeah, I had too, actually, and yeah, I can't wait to try that one out, because Tyler had been talking about it, I think, too, and sounded really, really cool.
I really hope he goes somewhere with it and expands more on it because he wrote some good stuff and he had detail to the characters and neat concepts for the universe. And I mean, sure, he didn't name things, but who needs names? Names are just ephemeral. You can come up with those. And that was part of the collaborative to welcome us into his universe, which was really good. And I liked that. He knows what he's doing, and I think he's got a good head on his shoulders.
That's great. Shout out to Tyler.
Yeah, big time. I met Tyler this year, and I feel like I've known him forever already because we were at a couple tables together, and we've had a great time. And I saw him do a range of diverse characters, and he's got a lot of role-playing chops.
Yeah, Tyler's a good guy. He actually joined last minute for the Monster of the Week game that I did as a pickup.
Oh, great.
So that was fun getting to play with him, yeah. But yeah, if I have to choose a game that I really liked and one that I wasn't involved in running, because I had a lot of fun running my games that I got to do. But GM Dave's Everyone is Gollum, I got to play twice. And so for those of you who don't know, Dave and Chris and other Gamer Nation people did the newest version of Everyone is John. And the premise of that game is that everyone plays a voice in John's head and has different, it's like a semi-competitive RPG, and you end up trying to accomplish goals, and you get points for doing that when you're in control of John. So of course, because it's Tolkien, he put the Lord of the Rings spin on it, and so it made everyone as Gollum. And since Gollum already has voices talking to him in his head, everyone got to take over as a voice in Gollum's head. And just the craziest stuff happens, since people sort of write down their secret agendas, and then the narrator, in this case Dave, has to like try to provide opportunities where you can make that happen. So like in one of our games, for example, someone had a secret agenda like kidnap the president, and so of course at one point the president has to show up, and the person who's in charge of Gollum at the time, his secret agenda was to kidnap him, so he went ahead and did that, and there was this whole car chase and everything. One person had an agenda that included just like biting people, and they just went around like biting people for no reason all the time. And there was just this one great scene where because like the voices in each other's head, you're not supposed to technically know in character like what the other voices were doing, so you just sort of like wake up, come to, and you have no idea what's going on. One person tried to steal a purse, and that didn't work out, and then so because of that, the voices switched, and it was someone else. And so they, come to as Gollum, and they're like, what's going on? Sees this like woman with a purse. It's like, she stole my purse. And so then like, there's this whole thing where like she starts, or where Gollum starts claiming that this woman stole his purse, and then, rolls the check and succeeds so that everyone believes Gollum that this woman stole his purse. And it just goes nuts playing any variant of Everyone is John. But that was always a blast. Yeah, I played two different sessions, and everyone always just did the craziest stuff.
Steve, do you want to tell them, or shall I?
What are we telling them, Steve?
They were just telling us about Dave's Everyone is Gollum game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me and Dave had a bit of parallel thinking, because Steve knows I had no idea. I was absolutely shocked when I found out. I was like, oh, I'm going to run Everyone is John, because I got a signed copy off of him and Chris last year. And no, that's not happening. Steve was like, did you know that Dave was planning on running this? And I was like, what? No.
Ah, that's awesome, though. Yeah, I mean, in retrospect, like, it makes total sense. So it was like a perfect, setup for that kind of game. But yeah, I'm sorry that you couldn't be there and run it too, because I think that would have been really fun. But yeah, that was a fun game to play in.
It sounded like, I said, I was actually during Brett's Earththawn session, which, well, what the hell? So I'm going to sort of cheat, because I had two games that I really, well, I had all the games I really, really enjoyed. But I got to play in Brett's Earththawn 4E game.
Nice.
And like Alex said, the adventure was really, really cool. It's this thing where there's this guy has gone missing. He's the local alchemist. And as it turns out, it was this plant, blah, blah, blah. But Earththawn in itself is a really, really neat setting.
Yes.
Like the lore behind it and the workings of the universe are kind of complex, but very intriguing, and like the way everything works together. And I will say this, I am really intrigued by the setting. The system is pretty crunchy. However, the thing is, like, it's one of those few games, I think, where you can't really separate the system and the setting, because the setting serves the system.
Yes.
So well, and vice versa. Like, yes, there's some complexity to it, and but I think too, like, okay, this is going to sound weird. It's not a great game for one shots, but I think if you have a crew of people who are willing to take the time to learn it for a campaign, it would be an incredibly rich and rewarding game, because it does these things where, like, for example, we all know, right, in D&D, you're always after the next upgrade item.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Earthdawn works the reverse of that. In Earthdawn, the longer you carry an item, the more powerful it becomes for you.
Yes.
Which I thought is really cool. And you know, there's these different kind of mechanics and stuff that you use to do things. And the characters are very diverse as far as what you can do. Like, I was playing this lizard person kind of face / swashbuckler type thing.
A Tuskrang Swordmaster.
Yes, yes.
Yep, that was my first character concept back in 1993 when playing it in college. Brett, Phil, and I rolled out that game right off the bat. Phil's like, hey, I found this new fantasy game. And we'd only played D&D and a couple others and Palladium. And Brett fell in love with it from the spellcasting aspect of things. And I played fighters. So I grabbed a Tuskrang Swordmaster, and they are just fun.
But, like, you have these various abilities, and, like, I remember there was somebody else at the table that was playing a character who actually benefits from going last in the round.
Yes.
You know, so, like, there's all kinds of, like, these neat things and ways you can spend kind of somewhat rechargeable currencies to gain advantages in combat or for checks.
Yep.
And, like, it's really, really cool, and I wouldn't be doing it justice if I tried to explain it, but it was a really cool game, and I'm very, very glad I got to play it. And it's fascinating. I know Brett also did a Genesis conversion of it, which he says he thinks does the best at it that any system other than Earthdawn would do. But it's one of those, like, I feel like, boy, there's a lot of crunch there, but if you're willing to learn it, you're going to get a hell of a lot from it.
And it's, I think, one of those. Go ahead.
I just think that's the best way I can put it.
It's a long time payout system. Like you said, the longer you own an item, the more powerful that individual item gets. You can literally start game with your generic weapon, and if you hold on to it and you keep it going, the legend of the weapon grows as the legend of the character grows. So you don't have to stuff quest for new stuff. You'll still find new stuff. There are still magic items to find in the game and whatnot, but it's all about telling your story and other people learning your story as you go, your legend. So it's a fun game to grow with. For a one-shot, you can put together some fun powers to have a lot of fun with it. Brett's Genesis hack of it is a lot of fun. It's still Genesis, but it's good. He did a really good job sprinkling in Earthdawn flavor.
Man, you're all making me want to play some Earthdawn now. I've never done it before, but I've heard Brett talk about it, and I've heard other people play it. You know, so got to get that on the table one of these days.
It's fun. It really is. It's sword and sorcery, but there's all sorts of neat species to play. Orcs are the dominant species in the game. They're everywhere. Dwarves have been around for everything. Trolls have their own lifestyle that really doesn't fit anybody else. Mostly the trolls are in airships flying above the surface. There's a lot of stereotypes that are just thrown out the window, and for the 90s, this was a pretty progressive game, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah. So great. The world itself is a lot of fun.
And also, canonically, this world is the precursor to Shadowrun.
Yes.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, that's one of the things that they snuck in. Shadowrun, I don't remember. I think I played Shadowrun first. I honestly can't remember. But thousands of years separate the two worlds. But the similarities between Shadowrun and Earthdawn are blatant. And then in the mid-90s, I want to say like 94, 95, they put out a Shadowrun adventure called Harlequin, which involves dragons. And some of the dragons have the same names as the dragons in Earthdawn. And it's not a coincidence, because they're the same dragons that are just still around.
That's great.
Yeah, it was crazy. It's not a huge spoiler. It was advertised in Dragon Magazine all over the place, but, you know.
But yeah, like I said, that really, like, yes, some of the step mechanics in that get a little confusing. The way Brett had everything prepped and statted out, it was very easy to play. There would definitely be a learning curve, though, for you to just pick it up and, hey, I'm going to learn this while I run it for the rest of you who are all learning it. That would be tough.
Yeah.
But based again, on what you said, oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, go ahead, JT.
But I've said it before on the show, actually, and I love games that where the settings and themes and mechanics are all tied together. So based on what you've said, though, it sounds like Earth Dawn does a really good job of that. So I think I'd really like that.
Mm-hmm. No, I told Brett as much. I said, look, this seems really crunchy, but it also seems like if you tried to adapt the setting to another system, you would lose a lot of what feels so special.
Yep. So Brett put together cheat sheets and handouts and whatnot to explain how Earth Dawn runs, because that's what you do at Gamer Nation when you're running a game that not everyone is familiar with. It's part of the culture of the con. You do that sort of thing, and it really helps people get into it and feel special and valued at the table.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, even people running Star Wars had, like, dice symbol and cancellation cheat sheets and stuff, even though most of the people there are very familiar with that system. So, yeah. Now, I didn't make any out, quite frankly. About the best advice I can give anyone for Havoc Brigade is make shit up.
Yeah. It works.
And the other game I ran was, you know, based off the WEG D6 engine, which is very simple to explain. And thinking back on it, perhaps I could have made some sort of sheet, but I didn't because I feel like it was complex enough to require it. But it was also one of those where, like, look, if you've got questions, ask us. We're going along. Stop. Help somebody figure it out. And away we go. You both mentioned, though, too, like, right, you don't get those judgmental looks from the rest of the table when that happens, like you do other places sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking about cheat sheets, I actually got to run a pickup game, and I think I mentioned to the Steves before that I've been trying to do a Cortex Prime version, like one shot for Lord of the Rings, and I hadn't gotten to plan it out as much as I wanted to, but I decided to just give it a go, so I sort of just ran it as a spur-of-the-moment pickup thing, I had printed out cheat sheets for Cortex Prime to have with me just in case I got Cortex on the table, and that came in handy a lot, and so I just got to run a game of that, and that was a lot of fun. But yeah, I definitely agree it's part of the con culture, kind of, that it's just very noob-friendly in general. And even if you've never played a role-playing game before in your life, you'll just be welcomed, and everyone will sort of help you through things. No one's going to judge you or get, you know, frustrated or upset just because you don't, you know, you've never played before.
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful environment, you know, very welcoming. What else do we want to go over here? Because we're going to sit here and talk all night if we don't focus ourselves a little bit.
I mean, if you want broad overview of things, the hotel was a lot nicer this year than last year. They did a great job with that.
Yeah.
So I like that. And I feel like, yeah, everyone like enjoyed getting breakfast together, and it was close to the venue, so it didn't take very long to drive over there or even walk if you wanted to, I guess.
I think I walked over all four days. It was about 25 minutes, but yeah, it's flat, especially if you're from where I'm from. So,
yeah. Texas is flat compared to New England. So,
for sure. Also, there was the auction at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Had one of my favorite moments of the con that I didn't know was going to happen, which was, you know, we all destroyed the One Ring together.
Oh, that was awesome. Yeah. Like, I knew that there was talk about that. Chris had talked about that when I had him on to talk about the con, you know, when they'd launched the Kickstarter and stuff. But like, even then, he didn't let on, you know, who had it or what was all going on. The way they did that was really, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To have everyone at the con take part in the destruction of the One Ring and just watch each other do it. And we're all laughing and goofing off as we stomp on a pin on the floor.
Yeah, and for the listeners at home, it was a badge from the first Gamer Nation con that was like One Ring, and we all got to smash it.
And then we all got a badge worth 100 gamer cred for taking part in the destruction of the One Ring.
Mm-hmm.
And that was genius.
That was genius. And then the con goer who had held on to the One Ring since Gamer Nation Con 1 got a special badge at the end with the title of "You, my friend, bow to no one."
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I mean, the whole audience was like sniffling back tears and really just choked up. And it was a great, unifying experience for the congoers. Again, yeah. Family reunion.
Yeah. And the other thing, of course, that they reveal at the auction, and we hinted at this earlier, but is the theme for next year.
Which makes me immensely excited. I'm surprised you couldn't hear me yelling from here.
I had suspected it would be X-Files, and I had said it even after the end of last year that, like, 10X, X-Files.
Yeah, right?
You know, because, I mean, at least for those of us in roughly my age bracket, that was a big nerd thing when we were, you know, college age or a little before, et cetera, you know, depending on exactly how old you are. But yeah, so I was really excited to see that. And actually, just I believe it was yesterday, Chris officially announced the dates for next year.
Yep. Yes. Also, another thing I'm super glad about this year.
You know what we should really do, though? We should let the D20 Radio community manager person talk about this stuff.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Oh, way to put me good on plan. The spot. All right. Yeah, no. So, double check the date so I don't say it wrong to begin with. But so next year, Gamer Nation Con X10 is going to be held April 3rd through 6th, 2025, Thursday through Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else you want me to say about that. I'm sure you can have Chris on to talk about that more, but
the other thing they did this year that was really cool, and actually we kind of skipped over this, was we got to destroy the One Ring, which was just a pin they had given out, I guess, just like as a funsy thing the first con. And then when they got the theme, they were like, oh, and so they had this whole thing set up through the whole con where we were trying to reach thresholds of hours to
yes.
tie into the journey of the fellowship going to destroy the ring. And then with these gamer cred buttons and stuff, there were the various rings that players could get. And some of them gave bonuses to the person holding them, but a penalty to the overall hours. And the other ones gave a bonus, but the person to take the ring took a penalty and all this stuff. And as it worked out, you know, we met the goal. Everyone got to do the thing, and it was this kind of game within a game.
Yep.
And I did hear them talking that they fully intend to do that going forward for future cons. So how they're going to implement it, I don't know.
We'll find out.
That's really cool. I thought that was a great mini game within the con.
Yeah, I made sure to get my hands on one of the Dwarven Rings. I set back the quest by 60 miles. But,
tisk.
I got one of 7 rings. I'm going to go dig deep later.
I see what you did there.
But, it was, it was so much fun. I'm still recovering.
Yeah. I do want to say, and this isn't in my capacity as the community manager, because it's not an official thing, but I suspect personally that there's only so much longer we'll be able to do the number themes. And so we'll eventually probably have to just, come up with themes, and they won't have anything to do with a number or whatever, but I'll just be like, okay, next year's theme is this. Cause just we're going to run out of things that make sense for any given number.
Yeah.
Well, if they keep making Star Wars movies.
there you go. That was really funny.
They'll keep naming conventions going as long as they can, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. I was actually joking around with Chris. Chris, if you ever get tired of the numbers, you could do what Star Wars Celebration did and just start putting the year. And it makes it a whole lot easier for you all, too.
Yep.
And then you just make the theme whatever you want for a given year. It doesn't have to tie into anything. And so we'll see what happens in the future with that, I guess. But Yeah, I don't want to keep things going longer, if you had wanted to wrap things up soon, Steve. But real quick, I was curious, what is like your dream theme for a con, I guess, that besides maybe paranormal, since I know you really like that one. But if everyone could just like choose one theme that they'd love to see at Gamer Nation Con, I think that would be really cool.
I mean, I'm going to say paranormal is pretty darn close because especially at a con, I like shenanigan games. They're a lot of fun, but I also love what I generically just call weird shit games, which is, you know, paranormal. Like the OG Delta Green for 5th edition Call of Cthulhu was one of, actually was the first real long form campaign I ever got involved in. So like that sort of paranormal type stuff is very near to me, near and dear to me as a gamer.
Yeah. And for me, it's like my main interests are cyberpunk. And so last year was 80s and that was perfect.
Yeah, that did work. Although I think it would be cool to have like a purely cyberpunk theme too, just because it's what you could do.
I would like to see that curveball thrown at some people, because I know I could play into that. I'd like to see how people who focus more on like a fantasy setting would play into a cyberpunk thing. Much like how we saw a lot of people who play a lot of science fiction get into fantasy stuff this time around, with it being Lord of the Rings.
Or you just do what I did.
Yeah, the crossover is strong.
I'm going to jump in there and go back to Earthdawn, because you can technically have cybernetics in Earthdawn. There are magic items you can get that will give you night vision that you replace your eye with. You put in like a gem, and the worm inside the gem eats your eye and links to your optic nerve. You can get bits of armor plating inserted, magical armor plating inserted in your skin, and all sorts of stuff like that. A cyberpunk Earthdawn game is entirely viable.
Nice. Yeah. I think cyberpunk would be cool. Another one that I think would be really cool was actually one that I heard as like a guess for what this next year's theme was going to be, which was like X marks the spot for pirates.
Arr.
I think like a pirates con would be pretty fun.
Yeah.
It could be like a lot of swashbuckling. Yeah, it wouldn't have necessarily be pirates, I guess. It could be like swashbuckling. So you could like put in some like Three Musketeers sort of things, or Princess Bride, or I don't know, but you know.
All sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah. But I think that would be fun, because I love that pulp stuff.
Speaking of pulp, they already ran my favorite concept for a con in 2019. Superheroes.
Mm.
That I had such fun at that con. There were so many superhero games. I ran a superhero game. I ran a Weird War Tales set in 1940s as the Not Justice Society of America fought the serial numbers rubbed off Nazis.
Speaking of that con, did I not? Correct me if I'm wrong, Alex, but I think I may have run Monster of the Week with you as a player at that con as well. I seem to be getting into a.
That's a long time ago, and the memory is a little spotty.
That's fair. That's fair. Okay. I remember you from that con.
Yeah, we met at that con.
For some reason. Yeah, I think I definitely ran Monster of the Week, but I don't remember if it was you or not for sure, but I feel like maybe it was. But anyway,
it's plausible.
Yeah. Okay.
If I'd kept better notes from that con, I could consult them. But I did not keep notes. So,
well, before we derail the episode too much longer, I will. Right.
Well, I was going to say also, just, you know, because it's how we do things. I know, JT, the last time you were here, you told us that Prime by Cortex was taking a hiatus and then promptly dropped an episode like 2 weeks later.
Well, what I said was that like we have basically stopped like recording new episodes for a while, but we had some in the backlog basically.
Ah, okay, I didn't understand that. I'm jerking your cord anyway, but
yeah, but it was just a couple that we had already done, but we're not really like doing anything new for the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, do you have anything else to like shout out or promote or anything like that?
So actually this time I do, and I don't want to get into too many details right now, but I am really trying hard at the moment to organize a Cortex actual play podcast that I'd like to run.
Ooh, nice.
And obviously, as long as that gets going, I fully expect it will be up on the network after a few episodes. So
exciting.
Yes. Very cool. So we'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Yes, and I mean, the plans aren't set in stone yet, but the things that I sort of do have in mind, and, you know, I actually have some players that I've talked to and things like that that can be in it. We have some fun ideas. So, yeah, keep your eyes open for that.
All right. And, of course, you know, Alex, I know we mentioned you're part of the Studio 404 Games conglomerate.
Studio 404, we've got a bunch of stuff, and a lot of it can be tossed into paranormal. Anarchy in Dragon City is heists, with magic and science fiction, cybernetics, all sorts of stuff. Mechasys, GM Phil ran a very successful Mechasys campaign at Gamer Nation this year, set in a magic universe where they had magic battle mechs. Really exciting stuff. Our original setting is Starkana, which is space opera with magic and divine beings. And so easy to run a paranormal game in that because magic is brand new, emerging in this galaxy. They've had divine magic from the Vile Pantheon deities for millennia, and suddenly this new thing called Starkanists are popping up, and they have magic, and the church is trying to deny it and crush it, but there's these beings that have magical abilities. It's just crazy paranormal stuff.
Paranormal.
So, yeah, obviously, yeah, we can check all their stuff out. We'll throw a link to websites and drive through and all that. And it's all really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Studio404games.com. We're on all your favorite social medias and your least favorite social medias. So.
And they've got stickers and merch and stuff, I think.
Yeah, we've got stickers. We've got T-shirts, mouse pads. Phone cases. At Gamer Nation Con, we unveiled little metal pins.
Yes, as well. I got one. I even have a hat.
Yes, we could do hats. We have a merch link on our website. You can get whatever picture of our catalog you want, put on whatever merch you want. We'll ship it to you.
Yep.
Very cool.
Rep the team. We love it.
Well, with all that being said, I think it's time.
Let's do Game of the Week.
Game of the Week.
Woohoo! Game of the Week.
Game of the Week.
Game of the Week. Game of the Week.
So, Alex, as not having participated in this before, we will gladly give you the option to bat later in the order so that you can kind of get a feel for how this works. So, that being that, who wants to volunteer to go first?
I can go first. Okay. Mine's kind of easy. I have a two-page RPG for $1 called Ambrosia from Michael Brown. Danger lurks in the wreckage. The heroes receive their lucrative offer to locate a crashed ship and recover a mysterious cargo, but this seemingly simple mission takes a sinister turn when they discover a wreck that holds a monstrous secret. So this is a short science fiction adventure using the Cepheus engine. Apparently it's a 2d6 engine. It's been around for a little while. I had to do a little research on it. I hadn't heard of it.
Traveler.
Oh yeah, it is the Traveler engine.
Yeah,
that's my bad. But yeah, Cepheus, well, aside from that, Ambrosia, pretty neat looking two-page adventure.
Cool.
I could go next.
All right.
Yeah. And you know, it's hard to keep track now of like everything that I've ever pitched for Game of the Week. So forgive me if this is one I've done before. I'll choose a different one. But Parsley. Anyone remember?
No, that's not ringing a bell.
Yeah, yeah. No idea. So Parsley is like a sort of a storytelling / RPG game that mimics the old text-based adventures of the 1980s. Anyone remember those?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like take sword, open mailbox, go north, all that stuff. Except they have like little modules in there and they sort of have keys for like the most likely and obvious commands that someone might give. And so each player that's playing, you go around in a circle and they get to give one command and then it goes to the next person. They give the next command. So you're all playing as like the character in the text-based RPG and you're picking up items. You're going to different locations. You're solving puzzles by, oh, you have to go here to get this thing and then go to here and use it there. And it's a lot of fun, and you know, the narrator, unlike in an actual 80s text-based RPG, you can sort of ad-lib responses to things that you wouldn't necessarily anticipate the player doing. So, yeah. But yeah, a lot of fun. I definitely encourage checking it out. Just a bunch of different pre-made modules, and they added new ones and stuff, so I'll make sure to put a link for that in the show notes.
All right, would you like to go, Alex, and then I'll wrap it up?
Game of the Week. I got exposed to this game at Gamer Nation Con called Havoc Brigade. I got to say, it was fun. I don't know if you guys have heard of that one. You know, it might be a little too underground for you, so I'm not sure if you're up to date on these things. But I had a lot of fun with it. It was great fun. It looked like the GM was having fun. It looked like the other players were having fun. There may have been some gut-busting laughter going on. Troll wedgies may have happened. But it was a lot of fun, and it was something I had not been exposed to before. And I had fun.
So, to be completely honest, Game of the Week is how we like looking for games for Game of the Week is how that was discovered.
Oh, fantastic. I'm glad that worked out. Call back to the back of the day.
No, you're right. It is. And you know, yeah, it's on drive through. It's on Itch. Actually, I think it's cheaper to buy on Itch. You know, now, as it comes, like I said, it comes with these orc characters, one of which is actually six goblins as opposed to an orc. But it is, you know, like, you know, I made the custom characters for the theme this year, and I have a concept that I might use next year if someone else doesn't take it, because someone else was talking about potentially running Havoc Brigade. So I pitched a theme to them. If they don't use it, I may run a themed one again. But anyway, so perfect. Thank you for that there, Alex. But,
oh, you're welcome. I thought it'd be fun.
If you're done, I have a game of the week that I was also exposed to for the first time at Gamer Nation Con. And I got to play the beta introductory adventure to Daggerheart from Darrington Press, or as most people know them, Critical Role. And this game is really interesting. Like, the setting that at least was used for this adventure, how do I want to say this, was perhaps a bit too jester for my taste, personal taste.
Okay.
And I don't say that as a bad thing. You know, it's just kind of that kind of, well, if you're a Critical Role fan, you know what I mean when I say jester. But the mechanics are really, really neat and really interesting. It works on this kind of hope and fear mechanic, which works sort of like a meta currency, kind of like Destiny points. But the GM uses fear, and each individual player has their own hope pool that they then use to power abilities and stuff. And there's a lot of mechanics that encourage interactive role play and relationship building between the characters, and even also with the setting, you know, some of which kind of akin to like some of the stuff Powered by the Apocalypse games do during character creation, right? You know, like Monster of the Week, JT, with the ties you have between the characters and whatnot.
Oh yeah.
So I haven't actually read the beta itself. You can download it. I think you can get it from DriveThru. You can get it through Crit Roll's website, various places. I'll throw some links. But like this, it is really, really an interesting system. It has a kind of a unique initiative system where, as long as the players are generating hope, they get to keep going unless the GM spends fear to interrupt them or all players have gone. You know, but then, if you generate fear, the GM gets to go and use up however many action tokens that the players have spent, because you spend an action token when you take your action. So it's this neat give and take with the initiative, but it doesn't get too imbalanced. You know, it's
interesting.
Yes, it's very, very interesting mechanically, but it doesn't like, and Paulie, who ran it, said, you know, when he initially read it, he was a little worried that it was going to be fiddly to GM. But he said, even with just, you know, the limited experience we had with that adventure, it was very much, and I'm sure so you guys can relate to this, like, you know how Genesis, when you read it, it's confusing as all heck, but when you play it, it's like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And he said he had kind of, you know, some of those fears with this, but he said getting it on the table, it ran really smooth from the GM side. I like too. So they use mostly narrative range, but they do measure it, but not as we're typically used to with, like, you know, squares and actual distance, like engaged range. So they have this little card that you're supposed to put the action counters on as they go to the GM. Well, the short side of that is engaged range. The long side of it is close range. Medium range is like the length of a pencil, like is literally what it says in the rules. Long range is like the long side of a piece of paper, you know, like, so the measurements that you're using are just stuff you would already have sitting at the table already, which I thought was brilliantly simple.
Right. And like, does that require minis then to play, or?
We were playing with standees, but you don't really have to. It's very, very much where you could just say, oh, you know, I'm going to get close. Like, it's not like you don't have to have that. Well, look, we've all been doing this long enough. We've played games you're supposed to play with miniatures without them, right? So, but like, I just thought that, you know, for purposes of if you want to use the minis, you don't have to have all the templates and the this and the that. Like, literally everything you need, you're already going to have on the table.
Right. It sounds manageable.
Yeah. And like, I know the adventure, there was this neat thing where kind of like the climax of it was this encounter where we had to get this NPC's action to resolve, and each round or each turn, like the counter went down, but if they got hit or if we killed one of the bad guys, the counter went down, but if the NPC got hit, it went up. So it was kind of this, it wasn't just a kill them all. You also had to protect and like prioritize by, okay, well, if we do this, we're leaving that them exposed, you know? So like it kind of encouraged more than just murder hobo style play, I guess, is what I'm going for. It was, like I said, I'm really intrigued by the way the system works mechanically. And like I said, the setting isn't 100% to my taste personally. I tend to like a little grittier fantasy, but that being said, you know, race choices were interesting. You know, there was a frog person in our group. There was a cat person. I was playing a giant. There was an elf. It was really, really cool. I had a great time with it. And like when we were doing the favorite game thing that got to play, it was a toss up between this and Earthdawn. And I had planned to save this for game of the week. So like I said, it would, plus, you know, it just being a beta and it's new. And like I said, I'm really, really intrigued to see where they go with this because I like the bones of it a lot.
Fantastic.
Yeah, very cool. Well, we want to thank both of you for coming on the podcast and talking about Gamer Nation Con today. It was super awesome having now an honorary Steve and maybe a soon-to-be honorary Steve.
Hey, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun. I look forward to doing
Absolutely.
It again.
Well, you really had to twist my arm to get me on, so...
Well, Steve's good at twisting arms.
Panic message at an hour and a half before recording time. Hey, JT, are you free?
Right.
30 seconds to curtain, Mr. Kermit. 30 seconds to curtain.
Challenge accepted.
Well, with all that being said, we want to thank everyone for listening. Remind you that Discord exists if you want to come hang out with everybody who, you know, in our Discord. Lots of cool conversations always happening over there. Patreon exists if you want to throw us a couple bucks. And yeah, just want to remind you to be kind to one another and get out there and play some RPGs.
Yep. Take care, y'all.
See ya.
Night, everyone.
Intro and outro music by the band 12 Noon. You can email us at meandsteverpg@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at andrpgs. Find us on Facebook at meandsteverpgpodcast, on Discord at meandsteverpgs. And as always, all of these links are in the show notes. Thank you, and be kind to one another.
How much for the cigar?
Cigar, $20, dog. You gotta go down the street to the store and buy that.